Welcome to the Great Lakes Golf Podcast. This is Hunter Pulaski alongside Brad Burkaw. We are brought to you by Reed Furniture. Whatever your furniture need, it is Reed indeed. In this week's episode, playing a little bit of catch up after the break we had, we will talk about all of the tournaments that have happened since we last got on air, some of the big takeaways from that break. We also have some college golf that needs to be caught up on. Some national championship action on the ladies' side, as well as some regional action on the men's side. We will talk about the Charles Schwab Challenge that just took place this past week. Davis Riley gets his first individual win on the PGA Tour. The ladies have their second major of the year, U.S. Open at Lancaster Country Club in Pennsylvania. We will talk about that. And finally, I guess not finally, we have some Sand Valley talk too. Just got back from a golf trip last week, but somewhere in there, we'll talk about the RBC Canadian Open taking place at Hamilton Golf and Country Club. Nick Taylor looking to repeat after the first Canadian to win in what was a very, very long time after making that amazing eagle putt in a playoff last year against Tommy Fleetwood. Poor Tommy Fleetwood. Always the bridesmaid, never the bride. But first, let's just play a little bit of catch up real quick. So if you don't mind, if I did my math correctly, or when we last aired, I think we missed the Wells Fargo Championship, Roy McIlroy, convincing fashion. Like you really thought in my brain, I was like, he's about to cook. He's about to cook for the summertime. Not the case. Maybe not the case. He does look good. Like, it's weird. He's looking in what was on the PGA. I don't think it was PGA. I think it was the Wells Fargo. It might have been the Wells Fargo. He was like dead last in strokes gained off the tee, which is just not somewhere you see Rory McIlroy very often.
Yeah. For this year's Wells Fargo?
It was either Wells Fargo, maybe in the first round of the PGA Championship. It was somewhere in the last
the month. Players Championship. He was terrible off the tee.
Okay. I thought it was a little bit sooner than that, just for like one round where he struggled.
Oh, but it might have been. Yeah, this is all. I'm only looking at four round collective. So yeah.
It's just the things that you would have thought, or that he has kind of he's held his head high on with the driving. He's finding new ways to do it. But so that was a fantastic win. The side by side of that, Chris Gotterup from Oklahoma, who just hits the ball a country mile, wins the inaugural Myrtle Beach Classic at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And then May 16th and 19th, which is what I'd really like to talk about, was the PGA Championship at Valhalla. Xander Schauffele, finally, after what kind of, they were starting to hear murmurs in the back from the people saying, can he do it? Can he do it? And he really, I think he proved a lot of people, I don't want to say they proved him wrong, but I think he really earned that and deserved it after what's felt like he's been very, very close for so long.
Yeah, he certainly had to earn it. I mean, having to make that putt on 18 to seal the deal, which I think everybody was probably thinking in their head that he was going to miss that. I was thinking, I was like, there's no way he's going to make this, I saw a tweet. It was like, in another realm, this ball lips out and we go to a playoff. Because, I mean, it was not dead center and it had some mustard on it. So you think even a fraction of an inch to the outside, that putt easily lips out, but he made it. He took away all of the climactics, and I got to admit, I was kind of hoping for a Bryson and Xander playoff. That would have been just electric to me.
You mentioned that a lot of people didn't think he was going to make it. I didn't think that putt was going in once it hit the first time it hit the hole. It looked like that had every, like that was going to be a Wyndham Clark at the Players, like a 2.0, where it was going to lip out. Obviously a little different circumstances, but hey, it was mentioned right after the, probably even on the broadcast, but, and I think Xander made mention of it, but I think and it turned out it's really a three-hole playoff. But I think at that time, Xander said, he's like, I did not, and he thought it was a sudden death. I don't want to go back and play Bryson on 18, which hard to blame the guy when Bryson's probably hitting a soft 8-iron into that green.
Yeah, I mean, that hole would play to his strengths, just his length, making that if he's on the green in two there. I mean, granted, Xander could do that as well, but it'd be a little bit more difficult for him. I'd like to talk about, though, now that I'm just replaying the hole back in my head, that shot he had when his feet were in the bunker was beyond. I think that was one of the most impressive golf shots. I don't think people understand how difficult of a shot that was. I mean, the ball was almost to his knees.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, he's aimed so far right, which is obviously he needs to play the natural. The ball is going to want to go left. And I mean, he's aiming to have the just, I don't know, that was a big time moment. He's aimed out into no man's land to the right. And it was a great shot.
It was probably almost, I think it helped him in a way that he needed to make birdie. Just given the circumstances that he kind of had in his head where he didn't want to go play Bryson. Bryson was firing at all cylinders, to not wanting to go back out there and kind of needing to force the hand a little bit and having to make birdie in a lot of ways, I think helped him make that decision and really like no second guessing it, advance it as far as you can. And to get it where he got it to was pretty impressive. Very, very impressive.
Yeah, there's no way I'm hitting that shot. There's just no way.
Well, and this can kind of be, we can kind of play off what you just said about him being in the bunker. The internet was not loving Valhalla. Valhalla was taking some serious shots online for just being like so rinky dink. Like, this is a course that we should see in the middle of July. No offense to Rocket Mortgage, the great tournament that it is, but like there were some spots where these balls, they're hitting it. I think it was even on Sunday, Xander missed. They kept talking about where Xander missed the fairway by like 30 yards, and he catches this rough rather than rolling the ball doesn't roll into the water because it catches this rough that it's just like the course. It was defenseless. And they made it so that it was so much easier than what it could have been. Like, they could have done some really simple things and made that course. I know they got a ton of rain, and that it's hard to defend against that when these guys are as good as they are. But I just I didn't get it. Like, we could do better.
I just did a quick count, and I counted like 25 players at double digits under par.
Well, what
so
was
10 under or lower, 25.
Not to butcher the stat, and I think you've probably seen it. It was from Justin Ray.
Yep.
This PGA Championship was like 250 something under par, and then the next closest PGA Championship was 40 over par. Like that.
No, I think it was closer to like 40 under par, and okay. The next closest was like 40 to 50, 60 over par, something like that. I don't think it was quite too negative, like 200 something, but it was the discrepancy was like 80 strokes or something crazy.
Yeah. So you see stuff like that and you go, okay, well, I know these guys are getting good, but we have to make this somewhat more challenging. So like there was the water that was in the golf course it almost kind of felt like it was out of play. You had to hit some really bad golf shots to find a lot of that water, which in a major championship, I'd like it to be like you have to hit like a kind of bad golf shot and you're going to pay for it. And that didn't seem like that's just not how Valhalla was set up.
No, I think the idea or what I envision a major, and maybe a lot of other people feel this way, I think a major really exemplifies the players who are really, really good. You know, to win at Augusta or to win a US Open at Bethpage or, you know, wherever, you got to be playing good golf and you're one of the best in the game. No offense to some of these guys in the field, but I mean, you've got Thomas Detry shooting 15 under par. You've got Bobby Mack. I know he was a Ryder Cup player, but like let's be honest, Bobby Mack is probably not the face of golf. 13 under par. Billy Horschel, who has not been able to play golf for like the last 2 years, is 13 under par. Lee Hodges, I mean, like I said, these are professional golfers. They're good, but usually in my mind, there's one of those guys that has a weekend. And in this, when you see this kind of volume of players shooting so far under par, it more so suggests that it was easier to get away with bad shots. You weren't penalized enough. You could make a few mistakes here and there, and you could still make birdies and still rack up a good score and finish in the top 20. To me, that's just not what a major is.
No, exactly. Yeah, that's where I struggle a little bit. The scores a little too low for my liking.
Too low. I want to see these guys struggle out there.
A couple before we get, because we're gonna talk about Scotty. I want to talk about Scotty, but it was very, very funny. A couple things I laughed my ass off throughout the entire time is how many times we saw that Michael Block commercial, but I didn't see it until after he made the 8 on 2. So he was instantly like 6 over par after 2 holes on Thursday. The big poster boy for the professional golf, the PGA professional, and he's like instantly 6 over par. And that commercial played so many dang times.
It was that financial one?
Yeah. Corbridge Financial. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was very nice. I don't say it was nice, but it turns out that Ludwig Aubert is human. It is possible for him to miss a cut every once in a while. It looked like he was kind of just hovering around the line and then struggled a little bit. But I'm sure he will be totally fine. I think he's dealing with some kind of wrist or something, has some injury that I'm sure he'll be fine. But I did want to mention that. I wanted you to have your John Rahm victory lap. This guy just sucks now. I don't know if you saw, I think Billy might have put in the Tuber group, and I'm getting my days all confused. I think it was the first round of the PGA Championship where the guys, after he made those comments about still being a tour member, even though he's suspended, he's still a tour member. The guys that I guess the fellow players were not too kind to him on the range. Very dismissive.
Oh, I think I saw that, how like nobody was talking to him.
Yeah.
So it's hard. These situations are hard because, you know, I could parade around and say I was right. You know, I could scream to the mountaintops that I knew this guy was turned into a loser months and months ago, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to take the high route here, and I'm just going to say that John Rahm is who he was all along.
Will you, for the record, will you accept John Rahm back to the PGA Tour if it comes to it?
I think that if an agreement happens, I think that John Rahm being on the PGA Tour is better for golf. Yes, 100%. I don't think that, and it's not a LIV versus PGA liking one versus the other. It's just I want to see all the guys competing again. So if that's what happens and there's an agreement and they all come back, then, you know, I'd like to see how the deal is framed out. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just better for golf to have them around. I'll still laugh if he doesn't do well.
Is he the only? So I think when like the news first broke with the Live Golf and these guys leaving, I think there was like a day or two where I was like a little bit upset, where I was like, these assholes, like, why'd you have to do this? Like, you're ruining golf. But then I kind of saw the dollar signs, and I kind of thought, put myself in their shoes and like thought about how much money that is, and you kind of understand it at that point. So I really have not, like, no ill will towards really anybody that went to Live. And I don't think differently about anybody that went to Live except for John Rahm. And I don't know why that is.
I'll tell you why it is. It's because everybody in their life can relate. If somebody came to me and they said, hey, you can do the same job, but I'm going to pay you a lot more money, I'm going to do that deal 10 times out of 10. You know, obviously there's some morality factor to it, to where the money's coming from, but at the base of the issue, that's what it is. It's they were offered to do the same job at a less frequency. If somebody told me I could work less but make more, like, that all sounds great. However, what I would not do is then go to the new company and continue to talk about my old job and say, oh, it was so great. Like, I think that I'll still go back one day. Like, I think that I think that there's still an option there. I still care about them a lot. Like, no, you move on and you say, yeah, I got paid more. Like screw those guys. I'm out. Like, it's the wanting to have the cake and eat it too. That's the problem. And the other guys, you watch DJ. He's like, yeah, I left. They paid me. It's like, all right, I respect that. I can respect your honesty. It's the whole how he tried to say it wasn't about the money. I'm trying to grow the game and yada, yada, yada. It's like, dude, just call a spade here. We'd all have a lot more respect for it.
I quit my job, but I'm still employed there.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, I should still have a say in what they're doing over there.
Yeah. I don't think this got a ton of publicity, and I don't really know why. I think I was kind of busy on Saturday of the PGA Championship, but Ted Scott has had a graduation for his daughter, which was pre-planned. I mean, obviously pre-planned, like, you know when graduation is for a long time, and they had an agreement with him and Sky, had an agreement to let somebody else caddy for Saturday. And Scotty plays like the worst round he's played in a very, very long time. And hitting shots, you just don't see him hit very often. I think Ted Scott has some very good merit to get paid substantially more than whatever he's making.
Something.
He looked just different out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's really no way to argue it. I mean, when did Ted Scott start carrying for Scotty?
There's a pretty good correlation you could make between when he started and when Scotty really kind of started going scorched earth, which I don't know. We've won 17 minutes without talking about it. Scotty Scheffler getting arrested at the PGA Championship will go down as like a top, and I'm trying not to, it's been 3 weeks now, so it's not recency bias, like a top three craziest sports story of all time. I think. I don't know how it's.
There's just some players on tour that you read that and you're like, ooh, like that could be true. He is not one of them.
He is the least likely player to ever see in that tweet.
He's like a recurring guest on like the Bibles and Birdies podcast. The guy is like as clean as they come.
When I saw that tweet from Jeff Darlington, I didn't believe it. First off,
no.
I did think I read it and thought that Scotty Scheffler killed somebody. I thought Scotty Scheffler drove over somebody while going to the Valhalla with the way Darlington's tweet. But then I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Scotty Scheffler.
My initial reaction is it was somebody trying to impersonate him. Like, I was like, oh, it's just some nut job fan that's pretending to be Scotty trying to get into the tournament to, you know, to be a player. And so they were yanking him out. But
yeah. And I think if you are listening to a golf podcast, you know what, the circumstances, and I'm assuming you probably even have seen the videos that have surfaced. Between the police reports and the videos that have surfaced, now even there was a video that came out last night of the body cam of Scotty talking to the officer in the car. I don't want to make this political, but wow.
Not good.
Not great. Not a great look. And that was on Friday morning. And between that and then Valhalla just not really showing any teeth at any point throughout the 4 days. I think I don't see the PGA of America making any stops in Louisville.
No.
Anytime.
I don't see an event happening in Louisville for quite a while. I mean, not even to add on to the fact. So the part of it that got overlooked, unfortunately, was the fact that somebody died. I mean, yes. Somebody literally died at this tournament. Like, what a mess, an operational mess. How bad is this run that we have people being run over at a tournament? I mean, need to get that together. And then you've got players walking like 2 miles just to get there on time so that they don't miss their tee time. I mean, everything about it was just an operational. They just dropped the ball just tremendously. It's unfortunate because I view Kentucky similar to like a Michigan, where they probably have a lot of really great golf there and they don't get a lot of exposure, a lot of tournaments that happen there. So for this to happen is unfortunate for the people of Louisville, the people that live in Kentucky. But I mean, you can't, there's just no way around it. They botched it. Lack of preparation, whatever it was, something was not right.
Yeah. And it's like, you can't plan for a shuttle bus to tragically like kill somebody. But then that happened like very early in the morning. And I know, and I don't want to, it's hard to like speculate with like Kentucky laws. I know like Michigan laws, you have to like close the road down to do an investigation sort of thing. And I don't know how that works in Kentucky, but just, I think they were dealt a little bit of a bad hand, and didn't do much with that hand.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd play devil's advocate and I'd say maybe you should have better traffic control.
Yeah.
Moving people throughout the areas better, more signs.
That'd be nice. I can't stop thinking about the police report where he
said I have destroyed his pants.
Yeah, pants, $80 pair of pants, damaged beyond repair. And you know dang well, I had a text a couple of my lawyer buddies that I know, and I was like, "Have you ever seen this in in a criminal report and or a police report?" And of course not. And then just very, very golf that somebody was, that a golfer was arrested with a felony assault on a police officer at like 6:13 in the morning, and he made his 9:13 tee time or whatever it was. Just a lot of very important people that had to jump into action that morning in Louisville.
if that's any other golfer on tour, they're wearing orange on Sunday. How does he even went to Texas? Just say you're wearing Texas orange. But I mean, my gosh, can you imagine how funny that would have been?
Yeah, I don't. Well, here's a question for you: like, what level is it? Anybody that was playing the PGA Championship gets that treatment? Or is it like top 10 player? Same situation.
Oh no, it's the fact that he is who he is. It's gotta be. I mean, I don't know. There's also the side of it that they announced today. For those of you who have not seen, they have dropped the charges. A lot of the videos that have come out do not suggest much foul play. It suggests a little bit of I don't know. They dropped the charges, and the stipulation was that both sides don't seek any sort of further lawsuits, which, you know, take away with that as you may. But
that feels like Scotty kind of letting that guy off the hook a little bit. I want the mean guy, Scotty. I want jailbird Scotty.
I think that's you know, obviously what they're doing there is they don't want to see a countersuit from Scotty, which it sounds like he might be able to. But so you got to take that into context when you think about like, would any other player get this treatment? I think if he like blatantly ran somebody over or like did something that was very egregious, he might not have gotten this sort of treatment. But I think you'd be dumb not to admit that the PGA Tour wasn't trying to look out for themselves a little bit. If you don't have the best player in the world playing in one of your majors, that's, you know, when you're already struggling for viewership and yada, yada, yada. All this stuff. There's a thought. The viewership, maybe this was a big ploy by the PGA Tour in collusion with the city of Louisville. They planned to arrest Scotty. They knew he'd be back, but they needed the attention, the viewership numbers. Stay woke.
I mean, it's very, very possible. I guess if you just read that police report, and you, because at that point there was no videos. At 9 o'clock in the morning on Friday, there was no video surfaced. All you had was a police report that said that Scotty Scheffler dragged this poor police officer like a long distance and ripped his pants and
guy goes to the hospital. Guy goes everything. To the it hospital sounded bad.
With abrasions. It
sounded really bad
and whatnot. And then he's still out of jail in like 2.5 hours. So that I did get a very big chuckle out of is. Every single person gave Scotty Scheffler the benefit of the doubt. Not a single person was like, he might have done this. He might have done this. No. Which puts, I made a comment in the group, and I feel like we're bordering on political, but that puts like the very stereotypical white American golf fan in a very tough spot on that Friday morning between like what are they thinking? They're like, what?
Yeah, because you're
they didn't know what to think.
Yeah, you're teetering on a fine line there. Gotta be careful with what you say, especially when you're can't let your golf fandom overweigh too much of the political stuff. Yeah. But.
A few more takeaways from the PGA Championship. We kind of mentioned his name, and I didn't feel like we probably didn't give Xander his rightful flowers, but Bryson DeChambeau is a little bit turning into a little bit of a force to be reckoned with again. A guy that I would absolutely love at Pinehurst coming up here for the U.S. Open. But he has been playing some really good golf. He put on a show Sunday. Really, I mean, as we talked about, he really forced Xander's hand. And I think there's not a person in the world that doesn't think that Bryson wins that three-hole aggregate if given the opportunity to. So good on Xander for closing it out. But just Bryson's public reception has changed so much, so quickly. And I can't quite figure out. It doesn't seem like he's that different.
No, I think so. I'll say I love Bryson. I think he cracks me up. I'll say I love him in the sense that I know that he's like a total goofball. I think what really changed for him is he just started to embrace everything a lot more. Like he's more so admitting of or just really embracing that weirdo part of him. Like I think before he didn't like when people. I think a lot of people made fun of Bryson, but they also would just laugh at how quirky he was. And I think that he didn't like that. He took offense to that. And I think that now he's kind of viewing it as more so like people like me for my quirkiness. It's kind of changed his tune a little bit. I mean, I think of Augusta, him picking up that sign and carrying it around. And like, he just like fully embraced that. He's posting about it on social media, making fun of himself. You know, he's got his crazy fist bumps at the PGA on 18. He's like just posting about that. Like, I think he's just more so embracing who he is and being accepting that people are going to laugh at like what he does because people find it funny because it is funny. And that if he can find that as a source of humor, as opposed to taking offense to it, I think that that's helped him out tremendously. He's just kind of like chilled out. I don't know. He was just like, he's so hot-headed, and now he just kind of is playing things off, laughing along with things. He ditched the hat. People forget the hat that he used to wear, that old school Puma hat. Remember the fake Bill, whatever. And once he turned into Flat Bill Bryson, he's just kind of chilled out a lot.
Yeah, I think I don't think people love super muscular guys. I think there you can find something to dislike in a super muscular guy real quick. But now he just looks more normal.
I think it's the muscular guys who just talk about how muscular they are. And like, he was just flaunting the workout thing so hard. And I mean, he still does it. He still posts about it, but he's just, I don't know. I just find him more quirky now. And I honestly think that he does pretty solid YouTube stuff. You can tell that. I think that the biggest difference for me is Bryson's not afraid to make fun of Bryson anymore.
Absolutely. I think that's very fair. And I think he gets social media and gets this age probably a lot more than a lot of other golfers do.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. A little bit of college golf recap over the last couple of weeks. MSU women did play in the regionals in East Lansing. They finished third to advance to the NCAA championships. Did not have the best performance at the championships, ended up finishing 17th. The top performers for Michigan State were Layla Raines and Katie Liu. For the team side of the NCAA championships for the women's golf, Stanford was the team champion. Adela Krasenek from Texas A&M won the individual stroke play side of things. She is the first golfer from Texas A&M history to win the individual championship. So congratulations to Adela. Stanford has now won two in the last 3 years and their third since winning their first one ever in 2015. So congratulations to the Cardinals. Monet Chun and Haley Borgia for University of Michigan both cleaned up on national honors. Monet Chun has been first or second team all 4 years, and Haley Borgia just became the first Big Ten golfer or Michigan Wolverine golfer in history to have first or second team honors all 5 years that she was in school. So congratulations to Monet and Haley. I know Monet was an alternate for the U.S. Open, Women's U.S. Open. I don't think she has gotten in yet, but that could change before tomorrow, Thursday. And then for the men's side of things, MSU finished 10th out of 13th in regionals. Not their best performance, but for the rest of the NCAA championships, Florida State and Auburn are in the national championship tonight for the team side of things. I've been watching a little bit of that on the Golf Channel. It's in California, so it's been on between 6 and 10 Eastern time. I'm not sure what time it is today, but some really good golf being played. Hiroshi Tai from Georgia Tech won the individual title. It was 3 under in the individual side of things. Very good finish. Gordon Sargent from Vanderbilt, who has played in the Masters, almost a household name at this point, lipped out from probably 7 feet to force a playoff. And there were a bunch of other chances too, kind of a swarm of guys at that 200 number. So congratulations to Hiroshi on the individual title. And then we will see who wins for Florida State and Auburn tonight. Moving on to a little bit LPGA. So while we're on our break, Nelly Korda proves that she is also human alongside Ludwig Ober. She did lose the Founders Cup. She finished, I think it was in 7th place, which is just not good enough for Nelly. She did bounce back and win a week later at the Americans Cup, the Mizuno's.
Mizuno America's Open.
America's Open. And now she is back in action, seeking her 7th win of the LPGA season at the U.S. Open at Lancaster Country Club. I didn't realize this at the time. Lancaster Country Club is a William Flynn design, same guy that did Shinnecock, did Marion, did the Country Club, did Cherry Hills in Colorado. So turns out Billy Boy knows what he's doing when it comes to building a golf course. So I'm very, very excited. It always seems just with it's a different style. We say it every time we talk about the LPGA, just different style of golf. You have to plot your way around the golf course. This golf course is going to look very, very cool with the shots that are being hit on it. I think it should bode very well for a great championship. Allison Corpuz looking to defend her title. She was the first American to win the U.S. Open since Brittany Lang did in 2016. Nelly going for her 3rd major, 7th win of the year, as mentioned previously. Kimberly Dinh from Midland, who just won the U.S. Mid-Am, Women's Mid-Am last year. She is also playing this year in her first ever U.S. Women's Open. And then, you got any thoughts on Lexi Thompson retiring? How about that?
Well, I have some
out of nowhere.
One little tidbit I was just going to add on the LPGA. Yeah. They will be in Michigan in 2 weeks. Meyer LPGA Classic is the weekend after. It's Father's Day weekend. So what is that? 3 weeks?
Yeah.
No, so yeah. Not this. Yeah. So two and a half weeks.
Nice. Awesome. Are they doing 2 events in Michigan again this year? Not to put you on the spot.
They usually have one
like 2 weeks after that or 3 weeks after that. Midland.
Right. Yeah, they do the yes, right. I'm not positive if they have that or not, but I have it like right in front of me actually, so I could do a quick look here. They do have the Dow Championship. It's the June 27th through 30th, so they'll take a little break. I always thought this was kind of funny. I think they do this in other years, but they play in Michigan, and then the week after they're in Washington, and then back to Michigan.
Yeah, I was just looking at that too. That doesn't make a ton of sense.
Yeah, but I digress. So Lexi Thompson, yeah, I mean, I wish I could retire at 29, but still have over a decade long career. I mean, congratulations to her being able to do that at a young age is awesome. she's been around. It is also whenever people say her age, I just can never believe it, just because I feel like I've been hearing about her for so long, which we have, because she's had a very long career. But I don't know. It's one of those bittersweet things where it's like, you know, if I were in their position and I could retire at that age, like it would be hard to argue against doing it. But you're also, you know, there's a part of you that recognizes how big she was for the LPGA tour and everything that she accomplished. And so you'll kind of miss having that competitive edge out there. But I don't know. I think that's kind of how it goes with retirement in any job, I guess.
Yeah. And I feel like when you think of retiring, you think like done forever. I think she's still going to play in like 5 or 6, 7 events a year. I don't think she's going to do like a full schedule, but I was talking to Tad about this earlier. Like, she has not had a childhood. Like, she just completely missed childhood. Played in her first US Open when she was 12. So like 17 years of on the road LPGA tour, grinding it out. I'm sure that just takes a toll on you. I think she has enough money to live comfortably off in the sunset. And I think she has I think she'll probably do some TV. I think she has a good TV voice. So I think I was kind of surprised when I first heard it, just because I did know she was about our age. But then if you just think about like just the length of her career, it was a decently long career.
Yeah.
I think she's still retiring in her 20s.
I don't think she has anything that she needs to prove at this point.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So look out for the LPGA. They are on Peacock, and then they also have quite a bit of. I even took a screenshot of it, and I have lost it into the abyss. I might be able to find it right here. Yep. So May 30th. Which is tomorrow, Thursday. They are on Peacock from 12 to 2, and then USA Network from 2 until 8. That is also the case on May 31st, Friday. On June 1st, they are on Peacock from 1 to 6, and then on NBC from 3 to 6. And then June 2nd, they are on Peacock from 2 to 7, and NBC from 4 to 7. So some decent coverage for ladies, which is well-deserved. And I'm very excited to see how that all pans out. We are definitely going quite a bit out of order, because we didn't talk much about the Charles Schwab Challenge. Just took place this past week. Davis Riley gets his first individual win. Kind of some really sad news that came out of Dallas on Saturday morning. Yeah, Saturday morning, Grayson Murray committed suicide, I guess Friday night, Saturday morning, found Saturday morning, which once I heard the news, I knew this moment of reckoning was coming for you and I. I feel like we have both said what we've said about Grayson Murray. Mental health, very serious thing. It's a very serious thing. If you have a problem, get help. I kind of thought he was, without knowing the guy obviously at all, kind of felt like he was on the up and up. 2 wins last year, already won this year on the PGA Tour. That's 2 years of guaranteed workflow, engaged in the last year. So it kind of felt like he was, and that's just where you never know, I suppose.
Yeah, it's I mean, you said it, we've been pretty outspoken with Grayson. I think that when, you know, some of the antics and things with Kevin Na and with Rory and things like that, it was hard to not address. You know, I think that there's a lot of, if anything, it's a reminder to all of us that you just never know what's going on. I think that if you and I would have known that there was stuff going on, it would probably, you know, would have explained a lot of things, but it just goes to show that you need to be more, or I myself need to be more accountable to, you know, how you react to situations. Obviously a tremendous loss for the golf community, very sad story. You said it, you know, if you're going through things, you know, try to try to reach out if you can. It's not always easy, but yeah, it's incredibly difficult. You know, I think my first reaction when I heard it is, man, I just feel terrible about the things that I said about him now. That's the nature of life. You know, that's just how it goes. And so yeah, I think the biggest takeaway is just try to, you know, treat each other with respect, understanding. You know, doesn't create excuses for anyone to treat people in any sort of way. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's just it's one of those things that kind of brings things into perspective, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Yeah, he's very fair to say. I think that was well put. I don't really have a ton else to say. I don't think it really. He's going through some stuff. Going through some stuff. Everyone's going through some stuff.
Yep. There's not much to say. Never anything that we could say that'll make anything better. But I think as long as you just try to take away from it to be better, that's all we can do.
Amen. All right. Moving on to the RBC Canadian Open, hosted by Hamilton Golf and Country Club in the great town of Hamilton, Ontario, in Canada. Nick Taylor looking to repeat as champion after. Do you have that year? It's like 1950, isn't it? The last time a Canadian golfer won the Canadian Open.
Yes, I have it right in front of me here. Looking for the Canadian flag, and I am coming up
well short.
Bare. I'm not even seeing a Canadian flag for the RBC Canadian Open.
It was a very long time.
Unless this is... Oh, wait. So, okay. This is why. It's because they have the old Canadian flag, which is no longer the same Canadian flag that they use today. So it would be Pat Fletcher in 1954.
Yeah. Okay. So it had been a while, I think that was kind of like maybe a little bit of a coming out party. Taylor Pendrith just won this year. Nick Taylor wins last year. You got Adam Hadwin. You got Corey Connors. I am certainly forgetting.
Mac Boucher.
Yep, Mac Boucher. I will not say anything mean about him. I don't want to get in his feels. Mike Weir, obviously, is kind of like the godfather of this whole operation. And getting Canadian golf to where it is today. But obviously it was very, very cool to see. I personally love the look of Canadian, like just, it looks so green, just very, very, the contrast, I'm a big contrast guy. And, there is some great contrast in, Canada. This golf course is, I wouldn't say it's, super challenging. They have changed it up a little bit since last time they played here was 2018. Rory McIlroy was the winner, which at the time, it did not make a ton of sense. This is not really a course that you would think that Rory McIlroy would go out and tear up. It is, you don't need a driver in a ton of spots. It is a little bit longer. It's about 7,000 yards, par 70. They've done some redesigns, some renovations since 2019, so very similar to last week at the Charles Schwab Challenge, kind of a little bit of a revamped golf course, kind of the same bones as 2019, but a little bit of a facelift. So the greens are now 100% bent grass. There is no poa in them. They have gotten about 20% larger. Full bent grass is just cheating for these guys. I have a feeling you're going to see a lot of putts go in. Rory McIlroy shot 22 under par on a par 70 in 2019. I expect it to be higher than that. They don't get the green super fast, like 11 and a half on the stint meter. So really kind of that go zone. Rough is a little bit shorter than it was in 2019, down to about 3.5 inches. And it is a composite golf course of, I think they have 3 9s at the Hamilton Golf Country Club. Pretty sure they're using the mix of all three of them, at least the West and the South course. I don't know what they're doing with, if maybe a couple holes on the East course. You have an odds board by chance?
I do, but I actually, before.
Yeah, what do you got?
I go through the odds board. I had a fun little tidbit for those of us out there two-time winner of this tournament was none other than Tom Weisskopf, which may sound like a familiar name to some because he is the designer of the Forest Dunes golf course here in Michigan, among other golf course that he designed throughout his career, but most notably for us Michiganders, the Forest Dunes course, and then also the it's Shaney Creek Cedar River, one of the two, but the Shaney Creek course, he was also the designer of there. So I am pulling up, this is giving me all sorts of issues right now, but I am attempting to pull up the odds board right now.
Let's see if I can beach to it.
Asking me to verify my location.
All right, I got
no,
it.
No.
So RBC Canadian Open, let's do just winning only at plus 360. We got Rory McIlroy. Obviously coming in with some pretty good form. So he is the leader in the clubhouse by a substantial margin. Next closest is 16-1, Tommy Fleetwood, after his second place finish last year. That is a name I don't mind at all. Heath Thigala coming in at 18-1. Corey Connors, the first Canadian off the board, at 22-1. Sam Burns at 25-1. I can't take Sam Burns seriously ever since that little, he had that little kid comment about how if his wife goes into labor, he's not to leave the Masters, and he just goes out and shoots like an 82 the first round. Yeah. I don't think you're going to have to worry about that, Sam.
No.
You can just...
You'll be home in time. Don't worry.
You might as well just go home now. I think we start seeing our first little bit of value at Shane Lowry at 25-1. I really like... I think Shane fits this golf course very well. Alex Noren at 25-1. Cameron Young at 25-1. Adam Scott at 30-1. Keith Mitchell at 35 alongside Maverick McNealy and Tom Kim. At 40-1, we have Aaron Rye and another Canadian that I did miss when I mentioned the Canadians, Mackenzie Hughes, also at 40-1. And we will stop at the 55-1s. I have three of them, Eric Van Rooyen, Akshay Bhatia, and Davis Thompson. I think I was expecting more out of Akshay. Ended up missing the cut at the PGA Championship, which isn't like unheard of, obviously. But thought he had been playing some pretty good golf leading up to that event. So I was surprised to see him struggle there. Any names that I just listed that are catching your eye?
So I like Corey Connors. He's a easy to go for with Canadian roots. I've been big on Sahith for quite a while. He's been making some splashes here and there. He struggles on Sunday. But one of these days, probably not at a major, more likely to be at one of these style events, I could see him pulling through. So I don't mind Sahith. Two names that were actually right after where you ended at 60-1 and 65-1, Adam Hadwin and Taylor Pendrith. Both Canadians, I wouldn't maybe pick them to be outright winners, but I could see some potential value there with finishing positions for them. But really, it's hard not to stare at the big-headed monster at the front with Rory. And all the news that's been going on with him, you know, we didn't really touch on it, but I don't feel the need to talk about someone's divorce or anything like that. But he obviously has a lot of stuff going on, goes out and goes absolutely nuclear at the Wells Fargo, has not seen much fire since then, but... I don't know. I think he's got some churning in the tank. So I could see, and he obviously has some history here, has played well here. So hard to not view him. There's not very many players here, actually. He would join Lee Trevino, Sam Snead, Tommy Armour, and Leo Digel as the only players to win more than twice at the Canadian Open. I could see it. I could see him getting through. I mean, that would, with this tournament being canceled in 20 and 21, that would make three out of the last four tournaments for him.
Yeah. Which wouldn't be.
So I don't hate him. Tommy Fleetwood played very well here last year, runner up to Nick Taylor. So there's some intriguing names at the top. Those top three are all names that catch my eye a little bit.
Yeah, and I mentioned it while doing the odds board. Shane Lowry has some really good form, obviously. And I don't think it's any secret during the Zurich Classic, I think Rory carried him majority of the way to that victory. But then he just played well at the PGA Championship, finished T6th. I think he's like a really good ball striker for this golf course.
Almost had the lowest round in major history.
Yeah, and that in the moment I wanted that to go in, but now that he missed it, and I kind of had a second of clarity, I didn't want Valhalla anywhere near a major championship record.
No, doesn't deserve it.
Because I don't think it would have been like there was that like Brandon Grace shot 62 at the Open a few years ago. That was like a strokes gained round that was very impressive. I don't know what the numbers are, but I have a feeling that Shane Lowry round wasn't really even that impressive in comparison to the rest of the field that was just destroying that golf course.
Yes.
I'm looking through the back end of it here to see if there's any names that kind of catch my eye. I'm not really seeing anything. A great opportunity for anybody that's not qualified for, I think I read the top three players to make the cut this week that are not already qualified for the Open receive Open invites as well. So that is something to keep in mind as a kind of a helping the players we'll be playing for. All right. I think that's probably all I have for RBC Canadian Open. Anything else?
No, I think.
All right. Let's quickly talk about Sand Valley. So I went on a golf trip last week, starting on Monday. This is like the third or fourth year, third year that we've done this, where we try to find some places kind of in the beginning of the season that are a little bit cheaper than they would be middle of the season. So we chose, I guess Peter actually chose Sand Valley. So we left Monday morning at 6 a.m. and it takes 6.5 hours to get there. I would say starting in about Escanaba, it just rained and rained and rained and rained and rained the rest of the trip, which was still another 3 hours. We get to the golf course and it is still raining. It just clears up around 2 o'clock. So we go play the sandbox, which is the par three course at Sand Valley. I wasn't the biggest fan of it. A lot of the numbers were exactly the same. And I think we did it a little bit wrong, where in our heads, we were like, let's just play 18 holes, just kind of get our bodies loose, because we weren't going to play until the next day originally. I think that would have been a much better experience if you would have played golf. Like, you already played 18 holes on one of the other courses, and then you go play the sandbox with like a drink in your hand. But I think because we did it first, I wasn't as fond of the experience. So we ended up playing, I think we played 15 or 16 holes, and we caught a group that was in front of us. And while this was all happening, this was on Monday, Tuesday's weather looked awful. It looked really, really bad. So I think our thought was, let's play more on Monday because we don't know what's happening on Tuesday yet. So after we played the sandbox, we went over to a course called Arrowhead. Yep. I think it was called Arrowhead Golf.
Pines.
The Lakes course. No, we did play the Pines first, actually. Yep, so we played the Pines on Monday afternoon. And this was, I mean, it was a, I want to say it was 80 bucks, something like that. So it was like a decent course, but it wasn't anything, I wasn't expecting a ton. It was actually very, very nice. So we did that Monday afternoon night, played 18 holes on the Pines at Arrowhead. We woke up Tuesday morning and it was just really shitty out. It was just nasty, raining, windy. But in Wisconsin, they have that sand base. It just doesn't flood there. Like we got so much rain in that 48-hour span, and the course was completely dry. So we had plans to play 18 holes at Arrowhead Lakes course, the other Arrowhead course, Tuesday morning. It was raining so hard and there was lightning in the air. So we're like, we'll just play nine. We made it through six holes, and my mother would have been so mad at me if she knew I was on that golf course with the electricity that was in the air. It was a little bit. So after about six holes, we saw lightning and we're like, okay, we got to stop. So we went inside for an hour. We went back out and played the three more holes. This was at about noon, and it was still raining. And at this point, Sand Valley, we were getting texts from Sand Valley saying that everyone was off the golf course there. Finally, at 2:30, the rain subsides for a little bit. They let golfers back on Sand Valley. We tee off at 4:30, and we play the front nine at Mammoth Dunes, which was awesome. Very, very cool golf course, but another storm rolled in. And that was like a total tornado, like an actual tornado. We were like just on the outskirts of the true purple on the radar, watching it. I don't think I've really been in a tornado. That was very, very eerie, like very calm and just, I didn't love it, I'll tell you that much. So that was a little bit of a disappointment that we only be able to play nine holes at Mammoth Dunes on Tuesday afternoon. Like, there's no carts at Sand Valley, so the logistics of getting everyone off the golf course was probably chaos for them. Like, they have trucks, like pickup trucks. They come pick you up on the golf course and take you in. And there's three golf courses on property and just really spread out. So we got called in at 6:30, but didn't really start storming until like 7:45. So I think we had a little bit of a sour taste in our mouth that we weren't able to play at least like four more holes. But I think I understood the logistics of it a little bit, and I didn't like hold it against them. And then Wednesday morning, we woke up very early and we played Sand Valley at 6:40. That was very cool, except it was 52 degrees and blowing like 30 miles an hour, consistent. Felt like I was right back at the bear all over again. I wasn't like, it's always tough. What makes a good golf course good, and trying to make a rank, like a list. I was trying to think about it on the way home. I thought it was awesome. I don't think I'll be running back to play there again. I really want to play the Lido, which is that Stevie McDonald redesign from that was on the East Coast. I think Fourplay did a video on it. But you have to be on the resort or staying on property to play there, at least for now. I think that will change at some point, I would assume. But the weather was tough. I mean, son of a gun. You look around every other day but that Tuesday and that Wednesday morning. Real nice. Real nice. Like mid-70s. Mid-70s. But that's just, we play golf. It's outside. I did get a new golf bag. I know we've been talking about that for a while. Came in yesterday.
That's breaking news. Yep. New, I didn't even know that. Just now, we all found that out together.
Yep. On the second hole at Sand Valley, first off, we were teeing off. We were supposed to have caddies as we planned. We did not have caddies scheduled for Wednesday morning, I guess. So Tad and Mark took a caddy, and Peter and I just carried our bags. And on the second hole, I was trying to readjust my strap on the bag. She just clean snaps off. I was getting a little nervous at that point. That was gonna be a long round. I did get it figured out and strapped up, but that was interesting in the moment.
Yeah, that would make for a long day.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It's a bummer the weather was so bad. That's an area that has intrigued me for quite a while now. I go over to Wisconsin pretty frequently. Family has a place over in Wisconsin near Green Lake. And it's one of those deals where it's like, we've got Lasonia right here. Or we've got Muscutin's another local one that's not like super amazing, but it's good. So it's like, do we really want to drive an hour? But man, once you get over here, you have, in the span of just a few miles, you've got like 5 or 6 golf courses that all look like absolutely incredible. Between the, I mean, and you hit, you know, darn near all of them besides the Lido. You got the Arrowhead, the Lakes, Arrowhead, both their two courses, and then Sand Valley's courses. Those are all like literally right next to each other. So
yeah,
I think Wisconsin, I mean, that area has so much potential for a golf trip. I think that if you're looking to go somewhere, you could just play, you could play a new course there for multiple days.
Yeah. The only thing I didn't love about it, there was no big lake right to the east of us to break the rain up. I kept thinking if we were in Michigan right now, we'd have a chance, but it just stayed. But I did mention it like when I first started talking, the sand base ground is incredible.
It's wild.
It's not fun to really play off of. I prefer a little bit of oomph under my ball. But it made for when it is raining, it had no effect. I mean, when I say it poured rain all day Tuesday and all day Tuesday night, and we got to the golf course Wednesday, and you would have thought that it hadn't rained in 3 weeks.
Yeah, even Lasonia, I mean, they've gotten so much rain there, but the courses just drain like crazy.
Yeah. So overall, I thought it was an awesome experience. You did there, as I did mention, no carts, which actually is kind of reinvigorated. I plan on walking today for Men's Day. I'm reinvigorated my love for carrying, just because I have my bag is super light from having to carry it at Sand Valley. So I'm going to try to keep it rocking and rolling. That's where it kind of gets like, you look at the greens feed, you go, okay, this isn't too bad. But then you add in the caddies are what would they, like self-contractors or independent contractors. Yeah. So rather than like Whistling Straits, you pay the golf shop for the caddy, you have to pay cash for the Sand Valley caddy plus a tip, which ends up being like 70% of the round I added on top. So like, that's really where they get you. I think you could, I was fine without a caddy at Sand Valley, but it was very helpful to overhear what Tad and Mark's caddy was saying to them as far as lines go and things like that.
But so wait, is the caddy mandatory? Because a lot of places make you take a caddy. But if you didn't get one, is it because they would make you take one? They just didn't have anybody?
No, it was not mandatory.
Oh, okay.
I think that's more of a, that might be more of a private club thing. Like a nice, just so you know, you got any hoodlums out there causing issues. I think they'd prefer. So I think what happened, it was actually that guy that was on the foreplay video that did the narration of it. I don't remember Slim from, he was a caddy at Sand Valley that kind of did the narration part of the holes and stuff on that foreplay video. He asked if we had caddies and we're like, well, we thought we did. And he's like, oh, we didn't have you scheduled with one. So we called in and asked if, he called in the caddy shack and asked if they had anybody available, and they had one guy available. Cause I think he originally asked, he goes, have you guys played here? And he goes, and we go, no. And he goes, oh, you might want at least one.
I see.
To help you out, which I think we would have been fine without. It wasn't, a lot of it was kind of in front of you. There were some shots that you would have, it definitely helped, but you had a pin sheet and stuff. So I kind of just aimed towards the middle and said, that's good enough. All right. Ooh. That all we got. We got you. Remember, guests next week. We'll talk about 2 weeks from now. We'll talk about that next week. Excited to hear about it.
Yeah. I think I took like 3 weeks off from golf with my trip and everything. And golf's a funny game. I played 9 holes, first hand back after 3 weeks. Haven't posted a score in 3 weeks. Figured that naturally the best option to get back in the game would just be go play. Like, I'm not going to go to the range. I'm just going to, you know, just dive right into it. Go play. Shoot one over par. And I'm like, wow, this is great. Just right back at it. And then go out like the day after and just barely shoot, get the ball off the ground and shoot an 81. So yep. what a fun game golf is.
Oh yeah. Very fun. Very fun. All right. Well, good luck with your picks at the RBC Canadian Open as well as the US Women's Open. And we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Have a good weekend, everybody.
All right. See ya.